Okay, here we go. So we're back with the podcast, and we're here with the man of many talents. The reason I thought we'd get you in, Glenn, for the first one back, or for the revamp, is because you're part of the set, which is the new rug. Basically, what's inspired us to do the podcast again is the new rug. It's not a new rug, is it? It's almost like a biblical rug. So there's a little story that goes behind that, and that's what we'll start with. But before we start with that, introduce yourself, Glenn. For those that don't know you, or those that might have seen you on the mat,
yeah,
or training here, introduce yourself and let us know what you bring to the table.
To this table, other than the rug. But thanks for having me on, Dave. I'm Glenn. I suppose the unofficial or official team physio.
No, you are the team physio.
Yeah,
I would say officially. It's official.
I've put it out there.
You've put it out there.
So yeah, in between training and helping out with that. So I primarily do Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu here on a Tuesday, Friday, Saturday.
Okay.
And then I've got my own clinic in Hemel up the road, physiotherapy clinic, which I will see athletes out when they're injured. Hopefully not that often. And then on the mats as well, always happy to help out and advise on injuries and stuff along that line as well.
So how long have you been in the game of physio? Did you do any martial arts or anything before doing physio, or was you active as a kid or any of that kind of thing?
Yeah.
What brought you to the martial arts?
Right, yeah, that's a good question. So thinking back on, I'll answer the physio one first, I suppose. I have been a physio since 2005. So what's that, best part of 16 years, 17, 18 years?
Yeah, I don't like to keep... I saw an interview with Steven Seagal once, yeah. And which was quite interesting. I don't really know what the interview was about, but it was around a time he did a TV series and he was a copper, which I thought was interesting because he said in this other interview that he doesn't like to keep track of space and time.
Okay.
Yeah, so maybe that's probably why he's not in the law enforcement anymore.
The Steven Seagal influence.
But yeah, I think the older you get, the less track of space and time you get. You know.
Yeah.
I mean?
Yeah. No. It's been a long time.
Interlude a little bit here as well. I'm not sure. I will be putting the headphones on here and there, but the only time we get to do this podcast was in amongst the class, and I mean, and this gym is in amongst a working gym. So I do apologise if there's some rubbish music on and. Some noise, but it should be all right.
Not a bad tune.
So,
yeah, so been a long time anyway.
Like, what made you get into the physiotherapy?
Physio. So yeah, I was thinking about this morning. Couple of incidents, I suppose, stand out. So the main one for me was I was on a school holiday when I was about 14, and we were on a camping trip in France. And we used to go back through this certain route to the campsite, and me and a mate of mine kept spotting this French pub. And we got the idea that it would be a good idea to leave the group, have a few beers. And we did that successfully one night and stayed in there till close. Managed to get a carry out, sneaked back on the campsite. So we're kind of thinking, oh, we're going to get caught. We're totally expecting to be...
How old are you?
14.
14.
Yeah. And managed to get back on the campsite, evaded all kind of teachers, and me and the group that I was with ended up sort of drinking all the carry out in the tent. Anyway, long story short, I ended up messing about outside the tent. We were doing kind of pranks and various things, and I was being chased by a teacher, I suppose you would say. So I climbed over this fence. And we'd been around there earlier that day, and I thought I was in a certain section where there was like a 2 meter drop.
Okay.
So I kind of shimmied down. I've got these torchlights chasing me and people coming after me. And I jumped into the darkness. Turns out it was a 65 meter drop. So,
holy crap.
I ended up in hospital I had to have full body scans. They thought I broke my back. I spent the whole school trip in a French hospital ward. And then the next 5-6 months was intensive, like, physiotherapy rehabilitation out of King's Langley. So that was my introduction to physio personally. And then I got back to a good level of fitness and everything else. And I attribute it all to this physio that I'd been seeing and thought, what a cool job and something I'd like
to do. Okay, so that's pretty... you was a little bit drunk.
I was very drunk, yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
so... Yeah.
But still tell stories now, the school, so...
65 metres is pretty...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've got a picture of the cliff.
You survived. I mean, that's a possible fatality there.
Yeah, yeah, I knocked myself unconscious. I kind of came round with the ambulance and the paramedics and stuff, so it was pretty full on. But it had been raining pretty heavily. They said that had softened the ground.
Okay.
I was expecting it to be a 2 metre fall, so I was quite relaxed. Apparently that helped.
Yeah.
And the alcohol... relaxed me somewhat, so yeah, it was I was quite badly injured though, so I was in a wheelchair for a while. I was on crutches for a lot longer than that, and it took me months before I could run or do anything.
So you took you received the physio
and that
inspired you to think, well, maybe this is something I would like to do.
Yeah, so that was my main influence, I would say, for that.
And the physio you went to where was it? King's Langley?
He was in King's Langley, yeah. He was an ex-military physio. So,
okay.
Yeah, he was decent. He was putting all the contraptions on me. I thought they were amazing. You know, the ultrasound, the interferential. But he was also, like, grading my exercise, rehabbing me well. Yeah. Got me back up to a good level of fitness. And, that was my pretty major experience, I suppose, with physio that got me interested in it. But I kind of drifted away from it a bit then. So... I realised that you'd have to go to uni, and no one in my family had ever gone to uni, and I did my GCSEs, and I did well in my exams, but I was being ushered towards doing, like, history and English and stuff that I didn't really see being of a benefit to me. So I left school, ended up leaving school at 16, and going off travelling, doing all kinds of things, and then having to come back and go back to education to when I've made up my mind that actually I do want to do the physio.
Okay, so... So that was quite a significant event in your life to sort of persuade you to do things, but you didn't just get on it. You took some time out and it pulled you back in.
Yeah, yeah. I kind of.
So
I
when was, did you go back to uni? Like, when did
so
you?
So I went to uni at 21. So I'd done my access course at like 20, I suppose. It was a year long course, so I had that space in between. So kind of in the bit in between, I was aiming to join the Royal Marines, so I got a bit of a bug for exercise from my rehab. So I was running all the time, I was training all the time, and I wanted to join at 15 and 10 months, but you had to have a signature off your parents, and neither of them would do it. So
my brother did that. He went in the army.
Okay.
At like 15
They wouldn't sign. So I decided to go off travelling and wait till I was 18. So I went off at 17 to Australia. And spent a year out there, come back around South America and places like that. So, yeah. And then in that time, I realised, actually, don't really want to join the military anymore. And
so up until this point, 2021.
Yeah.
You're in uni, you're studying for the physio stuff. You just exercise, no martial arts?
No, I did a bit of judo. So I did a bit of judo when I was like 16 to 18.
Okay, So you'd already... touched upon a bit of martial art and stuff like that.
Yeah, I loved it, actually. I've enjoyed it, but it was primarily on a Friday night, and then that was a phase where you start going out.
Yeah, you start finding other things to do.
So I used to actually do judo, finish that up, and then go meet my mates in the pub. And,
my experience of judo, because obviously, for those that don't know, my first martial art I did was judo. My brother and sister was in... Well, my whole family was involved in judo. And I always found it a bit of a... I don't know. And even when I've sort of like... Some of the people, like old school people that I've sort of come into contact with, and from my memories of being little, it always seemed a bit more like... I don't know. In England, it seemed to be a bit of a working man's thing. And a lot of the places that did judo were always like at a pub. Or a social club attached to it. like they did the that a hall in a social club.
Yeah, yeah.
Thing.
My boys go to one like that now.
And it's,
yeah,
there's,
yeah.
Oh, we'll have a beer afterwards. It's a bit. I don't know. I found it a bit like that back in the day. But
yeah, this one was in a sports centre, so it was kind of in a hired out room or whatever. And yeah, I mean, I was quite young when I saw it.
You weren't on the beers then.
I was. Oh, there, no, you yeah. That's kind of what. That's kind of what spoiled it for me, really.
I mean, but, if anything, you would have thought getting drunk, jumping 65 meters,
yeah,
would have put you off the booze.
You would have thought so, yeah.
But it didn't.
And then, I mean, I didn't pick up any martial arts then. That was my first knee injury actually from judo.
Oh yeah.
So I injured my knee, and but again at a party. So I was just messing around with my mates at a party, doing a bit of judo. Drunk and busted my knee.
Judo drunk.
Not a good mix.
Quite hard to say that.
And,
drunk judo.
Yeah, so then I sort of came away from it for a while. And when I went to uni, I started doing a bit of boxing there. So I probably did about a year worth of boxing whilst I was at uni. And when I came out of uni, I don't think I did any martial arts then until joining up here at Icon.
Okay.
So, yeah, I had a big gap. And... yeah, just
so. Obviously, being a physiotherapist is quite intense. You know, the training, the knowledge you need. You know, it's ever changing.
Yeah,
and you've always got to keep your fingers on the pulse, I guess. So what sort of so obviously that bit of time? What brought you back
to physio?
Well, not physio.
Or to
what,
study, you mean?
What brought you back to bringing you back to the martial arts? What brought you back
to,
coming to, like, because you've done judo, you've done the boxing and left it, study, because obviously I know myself, like, if I've been studying, like, when I studied kinesiology and things like that, it would consume you. It's lots of, like, it was very hard for me. I had to kind of choose which way to go, like, whether I study martial arts and teach martial arts and compete in martial arts. So there's kind of three different things I was doing with that, or try and help, like, try and study the body and the way to train and all that. So I studied a bit, but the two were very hard to do together. You had to put a lot of time in one and concentrate on one. So you've done that, but what then? Obviously, you now have you had a successful practice and you're doing your physio. But what brought you back to the Brazilian jiu-jitsu?
Well, actually, a lot of things happened at the same time. So I had my first son. And up until that point, I could completely manage my stress with weight training, running, squash, whatever. And then I started finding that just weight training wasn't having the same effect. So I wasn't getting the same kind of mental release, if you like. And a friend of mine had started training up in 10th Planet in Birmingham. And he said, this stuff's great, like, you should do it. And I started Googling, and the first name that came up was the Gracie place. And I was like, oh, I'd watched a bit of the UFC, the name. And then he said, oh, no, you're better off finding another club. And he actually sent me a link to Zay. And he said, look, this guy's pretty legit. He's near you. Like, you should try it out. And I went and tried it out, and, yeah, fell in love with it day one, really. It was the first time in probably 6, 7, 8 months that I'd felt completely relaxed after sparring. I got completely bashed up, but... like, I hadn't thought about anything else for that time. My phone was away.
You switched off.
Like, just, and me and Rich coined the phrase, like, violent meditation, you know? So it's kind of a form of that,
isn't it? And
when
was that? That was, what, 2000 and...
So, yeah. So my son is going to be 10 in June. So he was born in June, and I started training in the January after that. So... next January will be 10 years.
For 10 years?
Yeah, and I also, that was the same time I opened my clinic.
Right.
And so my son is like a physical representation to me of how long my clinic's been open and how long I've been training jiu-jitsu. So it's quite
I got cool. The same thing with my youngest daughter. She'd be 11 this year. So when I got my black belt, she was recently born. Like, I got my black, she was born in July. I got my black belt in the December.
Oh, wow, yeah.
So again,
it's quite nice, isn't it? You can see
it's quite a physical...
yeah, this growing...
yeah, it's weird, but it's like my human time scale.
Yeah, it's mad. I wonder if, like, for me, there was a certain motivation with him being born. It's like, oh, you're now responsible for another life or whatever. That's what kind of triggered me to start my clinic. But then ironically, that's probably what gave me the extra stress, like running, starting a new business, working around it, and that's what made me seek out the jiu-jitsu.
So, but there's also a link, because obviously I've known you a while, but there's also a link with your, did you do like a apprentice or mentorship with Rich's, like, uncle or something, was it?
Oh, yeah.
When was this? You've got this, like, because obviously Rich Harris, the Whiskey Wolf, a.k.a. not the, because there's no the in it, is it? But a.k.a. Whiskey Wolf. One of the black belts here at the gym for the Icon Jiu-Jitsu. And he's a good friend with you. You knew Rich before?
No, I didn't.
I knew his uncle. You didn't know Rich, but you worked alongside
I worked for
his uncle.
So this is probably like 2009, maybe? 2010?
Okay.
I worked off and on with his uncle, Graham, for probably 2 years, maybe 3 years. And I think I left and then I came back again, worked with him for a little bit more. So he had a clinic on Rickmansworth Road.
Okay.
The park physiotherapy clinic was well known around.
And when did you find this out? When did you find out?
It was quite a few years into knowing Rich. Yeah. So we were, and obviously, like, he's Graham Harris, he's Rich Harris.
Yeah.
I didn't put two and two together.
Because not normally, we don't really, you know, a lot of times, there's been incidents is, like, when I've been training, that one of our friends, Dr. John, we're sitting there training and one of the guys is leaving and he's shouting out, like, I don't know, like, Marvin or something. And it turns out this guy, I'm like, who are you talking to? He goes, who are you talking to? So Marvin. I'm like, his name ain't Marvin, his name's like Manvin. He went, oh, I've been calling him Marvin for like 3 years. No wonder he never says bye, because, you know, you don't necessarily, like, it's kind of weird when you're training, because some people like really like remember people's names real well, but sometimes like I have to sometimes, like, in the class when people go to spar with each other, introduce yourself.
Yeah.
You know, like, introduce yourself. Because a lot of people don't do that. Just bump, slap hands, bump fists, and just start rolling.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of a weird thing where the name is not important. What you do isn't really that important. Like you say, when you train, you kind of switch off. You disconnect from the outside sort of world, and you just get on with what we're doing. We're just trying to get better, trying to be, you know, make the martial art better movement, better this, better that. And I don't think sometimes the names and stuff, and you wouldn't necessarily, oh, hello, my name, you know, slap pants, my name's David Lee.
Yeah, my uncle is.
You know, and here's my family tree, do you? So it was
interesting with Richo, because obviously, like, me and Rich are very close, and he has designed my websites for my clinics and stuff. And then it was just in passing. He's like, oh, yeah, my uncle is a physio, has a clinic.
Okay,
and then it came out. But it was quite a while into us knowing each other, really, before we.
Well, I always say, like, the good thing with, like, even if, I always tell people, if they move, go join a gym, go join especially a martial art gym. Because you could go join a gym, like a weightlifting gym per se, or just a fitness gym. And you could quite easily go in there for 2-3 weeks and never really talk to anyone other than a hi and a hello and get on with what you're doing.
Yeah.
Whereas a martial art gym, you seem to, like, you know, you talk to each other. And you have to, even if it's like, you know, you don't know each other's names or whatever, but you chat.
Yeah.
And you'll find, like, someone's a lawyer, someone's a web designer, someone's a physio, someone's this, and you already now connected into the community and you've got, like, a good network of people to call upon.
This will sound a bit weird, but it's something about jiu-jitsu, especially, I think, where you're grappling with each other. It seems to accelerate.
Well, I bring up John again. I should get Dr. John on the old couch here, because, like, I've known John for years, white to black belt with each other. And he, when he got his black belt, I always remember him sort of saying, there's like a camaraderie that comes through training like we do that's very special.
Yeah.
And I've always said this about, like, when two people would fight, like a professional fight, not like a fight on the cobbles, it's the same. But when two people, like, fight professionally, or even like grapple, whatever, compete against each other, there's, like, you know, the avid old thing where you're not my opponent, I'm the opponent. But do you have this special connection.
I can imagine that. Yeah.
And I guess that too happens in the gym, because you have this, you're trying to get your movement, your martial art, your practice of the sport better. So, and then through doing that, I'm doing the same thing, but we've got to help each other get better.
Yeah.
So I think there is a little bit of a, you know, if you do something well, I'm proud of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you've helped me do something well, you're proud of being able to help me, so to speak.
And there's a weird thing with touch, isn't there? Like, this is going to sound a bit out there, but like, obviously my job is based around touch, and I see a similar thing. Like, it builds rapport quicker. Like, if we're outside of grappling and outside of my work, or anyone that's a like massage therapist or something, how often do you ever actually touch another human being?
Yeah,
yeah.
I think that's the thing as well. I think we missed the point on that. Like,
yeah.
If you're sitting in a coffee shop or whatever, you're talking to someone and they, like, you know them or you don't know them even, but then you're talking and, you know, they look disappointed or they look like they're upset. The first thing you do in it is you put the little hand on the shoulder. Are you okay? You know, the first thing you do when you meet someone, you offer your hand. And I think a lot of times, even though the old cellular phone keeps us very, like, makes the world smaller, as we can talk to each other, in different time zones, different places, I think we are a little bit, as much as we are connected that way, we are a little less connected with the physical.
Well, especially after the whole lockdown stuff, right? Like, not shaking hands, not touching.
I think what you're saying, I think, because I never remember having, like, I was a kid and stuff when I did karate, but I don't remember that.
No, same.
Being exactly the same. Yeah. And I think with karate, the way I studied it, you didn't need a partner. You did katas.
All the katas, yeah.
You
I did a
little
bit
techniques
of that. Yeah,
out in the open, so you didn't touch anyone a lot. And even like when you're sparring, it would be a touch, boom, done.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't have that connection. So maybe you're right. With the grappling,
I haven't quite got my head around it. What it is, but it's. I think it breaks down like social boundaries. You kind of find it hard to be uptight with someone after you've just been rolling around sweating all over each other, isn't it? There's a very strange kind of thing there.
Yeah,
it seems to accelerate friendships.
One of those things, unless you've done it, you don't know.
No, exactly. You know? Yeah, and probably not aware of it as well. Like, it might sound a bit weird hearing it if you do that. It's, oh no, that's not what.
Well, I think it's like riding. I remember when I was learning to ride a motorcycle, and I was like, people go, oh, how do you turn a corner? Because obviously in a car you just turn the wheel, but on a bike it's a little different. You've got to lean, you've got to do it, and like people, you just do it. You know what? Yeah, you just do it. Just do it. And then like. It's got to be something. I've got to, like, look at the corner, I've got to lean, have I got to do this? Yeah, and you can break it down, but at the end of the day, you just end up doing it.
It's done on feeling.
And I remember someone asking me, you just do it.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, that if you can break it all down and chunk it all up and chop it all up different, and then at the end of the day, it just comes into one thing, just do it, didn't you? So I think there is probably a thing, there is definitely a thing with the touch, with the connection that people have. That makes it a valuable stress relief, valuable, like you said, get that camaraderie with people.
A lot of trust as well, isn't it? Like, you're trusting your limbs with people. Like, if they get submission and you're putting a lot of trust. I'm self-employed, you're self-employed.
Yes,
you know?
Yes, you are. So, I mean, it doesn't always pan out that way. You are, you was training with, Zay and that, back in 10 years, but you used to float in. I remember when I was coming down to the west side, you would like, why are you not a black belt then, Glenn, if you've been training jiu-jitsu 10 years?
Good question. Must be just rubbish.
No, but it's only recently, like, I think it's only recently, personally, if I'm going to say what I think, is that you've just been on off, you've been like maybe a once a week for a bit, or then, because maybe work's got in the way.
Yeah,
like, because I used to only go down the west side on a Friday, and
yeah
you would like you'd be you and your job is like you work till
Well, especially before I used to do a lot of teaching. So the teaching used to take me away 1-2 weekends a month. So I'd be going all over the place teaching in Europe and Dubai and places like that. So that was quite draining. But I used to normally get a Sunday in, like no gi, Tuesday gi and Friday when I was training at over at Westside. And then here it's like Tuesday, Friday, Saturday now is the
routine. Yeah, you've got like a bit more consistency now.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so. I also had my knee surgery, didn't I? Which took me out for the best part of a year, really. So,
yeah, it seems to be at the moment.
And I waited 7 months for the surgery. So,
yeah, it seems to be a bit of a
Theme.
Yeah, so that's a year or so.
Yeah,
out, really,
I mean, I was training while I was waiting for my surgery, but I was 40%. I couldn't stand up. I couldn't, you know, I was telling everyone I've got on my knee, I'm waiting on my surgery. And then I got back on the mats at 9 months after my surgery, which is good.
That's pretty good.
Pretty good going. And then probably by 12, 13, 14, I was back to, what you know,
I mean,
a level.
The network of people in the gym is of an amazing importance to us. And like anyone has an injury, anyone has something, I mean, oftentimes you know, I guess, and I think sometimes the problem is I try and keep my eye on it personally. So if anyone's listening and watching, they should learn from this, yeah? Because I find like you're coming here to switch off.
Yeah, yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You're coming here to switch off, disconnect, get in training and da, da, da. So I try and tell people like, as soon as you walk in, don't go and see Glenn and ask him about your sore toe or your fingers hurting or, you know, something serious happens on the mat. If someone pulls something, if someone pops their knee or something quite, you know, needs a bit of attention, you're straight on them. Oh, let's have a look. You're trying to help them. Because, you know, obviously being a physio, it's in your nature to try and help people, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, but again, I try to navigate that for you because it's very hard for you to say no, no, no. But I try and just go, right, book in with Glenn. Yeah, book in a slot. And don't just, because now he's not rolling, he's tending to your ailment. Now it depends, obviously, if his foot's twisted the other way, you're going to try and help him.
Yeah, yeah,
but
yeah.
If it's a nagging injury, then just book a slot in. You know, we got a table here now, so maybe we'll run a clinic.
Yeah,
every now
we've got like a little pop-up clinic, haven't we?
But yeah, is that something you kind of have to
juggle
with?
No, do you know, like, on the whole, I don't mind. Like,
I mean, are you out there on the mat trying to cause injury in order to tout
some marketing business? It's a marketing strategy.
Because I did notice the other day a few business cards floating about.
Floating about.
Like, I don't know if you was like rolling and tucking them in, people's like,
I think
rash guards, I think sort of trying to rip the shoulder out. I mean, what happened here?
I think most people are pretty mindful of it, you know. Like, I don't mind advising people because it also it's quite expensive to come to me privately. So I'm happy to advise people on little bits and pieces, you know. And if it's at the start or the end, it's fine. Like, obviously, if I'm mid-roll, if the timer's going and I'm four rounds in, then
although
that's
I do think that you do offer a Crossface membership discount.
I do, yeah, of course, yes.
So always drop in that you train here, because obviously, if Glenn don't know you train here, then
It's still more than free, I suppose, though, isn't it?
Well, everything's more than free, but, you know.
But yeah, but, no.
And where can we find this?
My place.
I mean, there is a clue
in the name.
In the name,
yeah, Hemel Physio.
Although I could go to the Magic Roundabout in Hemel and not find you.
Yeah, although if you're heading for the Magic Roundabout, you'll probably pass me. So that's
okay,
that's pretty. I'm in Apsley, so
Apsley.
Yeah, Apsley High Street, opposite Dunelm. But actually getting a bigger and bigger percentage of combat athletes every year. So
the nature of the sport is
a lot of
people don't train properly. A lot of people, like I've managed to survive all this time until my knee actually has been an actual problem. And everything else that I've sort of seen you for has always been a little bit,
like a
bruise, you know, nothing too serious. But until recent, like this last past year, my knee is gone. But
bit of a run on knees at the minute, isn't it?
Yeah, there is a bit of a...
Yeah, yeah.
I'm trying to... If anyone out there, we get some deals on like five knees. You know what I mean? There might be.
Yeah, I think it's probably, like four or five.
I think there's five knees. And the last count is five knees. I mean, cold weather, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, but I mean, I've always kept a bit of a tally on injuries just out of my own interest. Mm. So I found that knees is the number one.
Number one.
And then when you start looking at black belts, the necks start becoming a bit more common.
Yeah,
as
necks
well.
Is a bit. I've tried to keep my neck pretty good. Over the years, I've touched wood. I've been pretty good. But yeah, just the knee at the moment is a bit of a deal. But
yeah, knee's hard though, because funnily enough, one of the reasons
maybe it's the resurgence of leg locks.
Yeah, well, maybe. Yeah, although, yeah, we'll have to look at the mechanisms. I don't think many of them are from leg locks.
No.
Here anyway. But yeah, so for me, the reason I started jiu-jitsu rather than going back to judo was to protect my knee that I'd injured before. So I thought, oh, it's only groundwork. Yeah. There'll be less
stressful.
Less stress on your knee. But however, it seems like it's the number one. Oh. And then I blew up my ACL, but that was doing an MMA class, I suppose. So, yeah.
Oh, well, okay. Well, yeah.
It was stand-up. Did it to myself, essentially.
There you go. There it is.
No, just wanted the experience there. Of the rehab so I could be, you know, empathise with everyone.
You wanted to, you know, yes, like the guy that gets big to lose the weight.
I mean, jokes aside, if I could go back, I wouldn't change it because it has drastically improved my management of ACLs in particular and knees.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't actually change that.
Yeah.
It was awful. It was, you know, stressful, hard, depressing, challenging, all those
things.
Yeah,
I think a lot of times, like when you said, when I bust my knee properly this time, because my knees popped and made noises over the years and, you know, a bit of rest, bit of getting on with it, just get back to normal. But this time when my knee did go and it didn't get good after a bit of rest, that depression that comes with the injury, and you know, and it's very hard. I mean, I know a little bit about the body and stuff, but just, you know, things that you forget and things that you don't, you know, realize or whatever, you don't, you know, see the wood through the trees. Like even when you said to me, listen, when you get that inflammation, you just get your body naturally gets depressed to stop you going, you know, re-injuring or doing as much as you need. It's almost like a coping mechanism in the body, and we kind of dwell on it too much. Oh my god! But it's to slow you down a bit.
I think as well. I mean, you more so than me. I mean, I train martial arts three maximum four times a week, but that was taken away like in an instant, right? So
yeah.
At that time I was training more. So I'd started to train MMA and jiu-jitsu, and I was probably training more like five times a week. So I was really into it then, and like immediately gone, like in a second.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, so
ACL, fractured tibial plateau, meniscal tear.
But I think that, like, again, like, because you, like, I always send people to you, and the reason being, as I said, look, because a lot of time you go to a doctor, say, or you go to another physio, or you go to someone else, and if they're not into or train a combat sport, we'll just stop doing it.
Yeah, they just, yeah, it's
yeah,
an easy
option.
You can't
do that anymore, just stop doing it.
Yeah.
You know, do something else, watch TV. It's like, no.
Well, even my surgery team, so I had my ACL, it was a bit of a struggle to get that repaired because I was,
under 40?
38 or something.
Okay.
And they said, oh, well, we've got a policy where we don't operate over 40. And I was like, well,
I'm not.
And they were like, well, you're 38. I was like, well, is it 38 or is it 40? They were like, okay, cool, we'll do it. Like, and then I did my rehab really well. And I was hitting all my markers, and I went back and I was kind of chuffing myself. And I said, it wasn't my actual surgeon, but it was part of his team. And I said, oh, yes, I'm going back to train. And then he's like, whoa. You do realise that like the easiest way to re-rupture your knee is to go back and do the sport that you were doing it for. And I was like, well, why have I had the surgery and just done 9 months of, like, if I weren't going to go back to the sport, I didn't even really need the surgery. So, yeah, that was quite interesting. But that's, like, I can take that and process it and interpret it. But if you're not in that world, you might say, oh, the surgeon said not to do it, so I better not.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, yeah, it's quite powerful words, isn't it?
Yeah, and especially, like, if it's a couple of years in.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I can't do it no more.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it probably took me 18 months. Because they say as well, 2 years for your head to get straight with it.
Yeah.
So even if you get your body back, you're still,
your mind.
You're not fully, that's why it was such a big thing for me, that first competition.
Yeah.
So that was, yeah, that was like more my knee, even though I was injured elsewhere. But yeah, it was like such a nice thing to trust my knee again fully in that kind of, like, you know, full contact jiu-jitsu environment or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, well, it is. Like, you know, it's most of my injuries, broken fingers, you know, nose, well, not my nose, but ears and stuff like this, it's all been grappling based.
Just because of
you know, the amount of time you put into it, you have to do that.
And I suppose you can go almost 100% all the time with grappling, whereas you can't essentially do that every sparring.
Yeah, you can. I mean, again, the modalities of training is a little different here and there, but yeah, I mean, you can push it a little bit. But yeah, I mean, and you know, it's a combat sport. It's not tiddlywinks. It's not choir practice, is it? It's like, even if it's choir practice, you can hurt your voice. You know, if you're trying to push something, you're going to...
Well, running, you know, like jogging, you know, that's probably got one of the highest injury rates of any sport, and you're just running around the block, right? So you can't really do anything without risk. But yeah, I mean, my point about the, like, just immediately losing that outlet is I think your body and your mind gets used to that as your stress release. So for me, my stresses of family life, home life, business life, whatever, I know come Tuesday I'm gonna, you know, blast it out a little bit Friday, Saturday. And then when that's gone, I think that's another reason why you end up struggling, because you haven't got it, you know? It's a bit like someone taking your medication off you, isn't it?
I mean, the thing is like when I study, like I did some study with the Czech Institute, and a big thing for them is when you sort of, you know, prescribing some exercise or, you know, assessing someone's, you know, lifestyle, and then programming an exercise routine or an exercise program for them, if they're like a semi-serious or serious athlete and they're injured and you take away that activity, you go, no, you can't do that, you just gotta do some balance stuff over there, it's more stressful to stop. It's like a lot of people say, oh, why are you still training on that bad knee? I'm like, well, because if I don't train, I'll lose my mind.
Yeah.
So even if I can just do, even if it was a case of, like the other week, my knee was pretty bad. So I just sat on the Swiss ball, got the boxing gloves on, and we just chair boxed, you know what I mean? To give me a little bit of
a release.
Oh, it's okay, it's not entirely lost. So that is a big thing, I think. And again, you going through that and being someone who does train, I think is a massive help. When you are treating someone, I think that's why we send people to.
Yeah, and it's a passion of mine, really. So if I could pick my kind of number one clients, it's combat athletes with knee injuries. That's, you know, and it's close to my heart. It's kind of, I've gone through it myself, and I understand parts of the sport, and I know why they do it. I know the drive behind it and all that, and I'm aiming to get them back to it. So yeah, that's what I enjoy.
Cool. And you're still back. You're still. Still training, still trying to get, you know.
Yeah, on the whole, I'm feeling good. Yeah, on the whole, I'm feeling good. I'm no injury, no issues with the knee anyway, for a long time. So I was just saying the other day, when we were down having our weekly lunch, and everyone seemed to be injured, and I was like, oh, I haven't had an injury for so long. And
well, then, it's not your turn.
Yeah, not
your
my
turn.
Friday, was it Friday? I did my rib. So,
ribs, same. Right. Ribs not really an injury, is it?
No, well, I kind of invited that one.
Ribs are not really a real injury. They just get better.
Well, it gave us the opportunity to do this.
Show a little cup of get on with it. You know what I mean? All good. So, we started the podcast or the conversation with alluding to this beautiful rug behind us, and we've now gone off topic.
Yeah, oh, the rug.
And I want to bring it back. I was trying to think of a way to tie it in, but I'm tying it in now. So, on a finish, so we're not here all day and you're not freezing, because it's a bit cold today in the gym. Tell us about this beautiful rug. Because I know you've got many a story, Len. And when we do have a little lunch after training, many of these stories are too colourful to be aired to the masses. I don't think the masses could... one conceive or believe these stories are true. So, but this one I like. So tell me about this rug.
It's a colourful rug instead of a colourful story.
You've told me about this rug many a time, and after seeing it, I understand about this little rug.
So this is from Morocco. So my wife's mum and dad have got a place in Gibraltar. So from Gibraltar, you can get a ferry over to Morocco quite easily. So we did that for a night. And then you're going around the souks and all that, and everyone's kind of expert at selling. And I'd been, I was training then. And I went into this particular market, and I was looking at this one. And the guy comes over to me, puts his arm around me, and he goes, you must be a warrior to look at that rug. That rug appeals to warriors. And I was like, I'm interested. And then when I looked him in the eye, and he said, but you've got the eyes of a poet. Like, you're a warrior poet. And I was like, where do I pay?
that was it.
Well, yeah, I haggled a little
just
bit.
Pulled you in with
it was like an outrageous price initially, but yeah,
I might use that, you know,
because I got him down. And then I thought, what better home for a warrior poet rug than the crossface training?
So you did have it in your home though.
You had it in my home, but it's actually quite a big rug. And
well, you told me you wanted it. You said, oh, that looked good in your little podcast area couch, but the trouble is obviously when you're shooting cameras, you don't really shoot the floor. So and because of the story of this warrior poet and from the transit, Glenn's being modest when he does tell the story of the warrior poet rug, it's hard to convey. You'd have to get the camera pretty close, but the poet comes out in him. And what we should have done was start the podcast with the story, because then we might have got some lyrics. And like it conjures up that poet ethos.
There you go. Yeah.
So, but I couldn't put it on the floor. It was one, you wouldn't see it, and two, you can't put your feet over such a rug.
That's true.
Think,
yeah. You when you mentioned mean? That, I
you can't.
Think
you can't.
Right.
You can't trample the warrior poet. You know what I mean?
Well, that's why I took it up. It was getting my youngest was starting to mess it up. We got a dog. I thought, I can't have this.
Can't
not on the warrior poet.
You can't have this.
Yeah, so
then
it was up in the loft. I thought, well, that's no place.
That's no place for such a rug. Yeah. So it needed to be displayed.
Exactly.
Is what happens. Yeah. There's no point writing a poem and no one hearing it.
Exactly right. Yeah. So,
thank you for bringing such a delight to the gym. And thank you for your skills on and off the mat.
Nice,
it's been a pleasure having you on here. Maybe we'll get you on here again, talk to some others, because I'm pretty sure we spent like last half hour, 40 minutes chatting, and I've just got one of the stories out. So we'll have to have you back and
vet them first
and make them child friendly. So thank you very much, Glenn.
Thank you, Dave.
And I'll stick all the links in the description of the video, so you can come and see if you need to see Glenn. Hopefully you don't, but if you do, you need some advice on an injury, or you just want to, you know, get a poem, then
that costs extra.
More than three. Costs more than three. More so than thank three. You very much, and a pleasure as always. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Dave.